Everybody a movie never seen a hit with another. Let me get up, everybody that be moving with me. On your mark, so you ready?
Let's go.
Wow. Okay, here we go again. You see the wind blowing, and I'm like a mangling the wind, and I be mangling the beat. They call me Dracula. Then they see the going in.
Wow.
Everybody know that I'm a coming, I'ma go. Then I gotta do what I be coming in to do. A body to beat, they love the baby giving them a show. Keys to the ignition and step on the gas.
Let's go.
And bust a bottle and pour me a shot in my glass.
Let's go.
Where we at? We back up in the building and be coming with a sculpture. Y'all already know who it is. It's Bustle Bus and Travis Barker. Back to the beach, we gotta go. Hit you with the fire trucks. Everybody better know that we better let it blow. And we gotta get it, y'all. Everybody, if you're really with me,
let's go.
My head almost exploded this weekend on Taco Bell. Is there a bunch of teenagers there talking about, oh, it's a shame that the Vita is not selling well because they really love the idea of a console with a screen and the controller. It's like, wait, what? And they apparently had gotten all the news about the Wii U and the Vita and PS3 screwed up in their heads. I wanted to walk over there and explain it to them. It's like, I'm at lunch with like three coworkers right now, and I don't really want to go that nerd on them.
Yeah, you don't want to oust yourself that much.
What I would do is just ask them where they're getting their gaming news from, because it sounds like CNN.
Yeah.
Or Forbes, apparently.
Better CNN than Forbes at this point, yeah.
At least CNN, you don't have to contend with this guy's smoldering glare.
God, I want to punch this dude. Just so much. They're supposed to have like good gaming coverage now. Is this the same gaming dude or is it a different guy?
It's about three guys, but the same gaming dude isn't like any better. It's just that what he's good at is he's good at calling game journalist assholes.
What's great is that if you click his name and go to his profile page on Forbes, the juxtaposition of his photo with the guy holding the Angry Birds thing is great.
Oh man. All right, well, you know what? We're gonna get into it right now. Let's see. What episode is this? 90.
It's episode 91.
91. That's
and
right.
It's June 25th, 2012.
Yeah.
Mark, do you have a link to that? What was that other article you were talking about?
Which one?
Or that CNET guy from earlier this week that said the.
Oh theme. Yeah.
Yeah, that the best logic.
Hang on a second. It was a. Dang, I can find the new GAF thread. Hang on a second.
Was it Valid Gaming?
Seems legit.
Did you see that?
We
had talked about this game on Steam called Revelations 2012.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Which is here. I'm going to read the Armageddon Apocalypse: The End of Days. It's basically a first person shooter.
It's somewhat
like Serious Sam. Is it a Source mod? I think it's a standalone.
It's made on Source.
Right. Source powered.
Right.
But it looks like a 2001 ass game.
Right, so it's a Serious Sam clone, but in the Mayan end of days. And so the one quote they have under reviews for this game that is obviously just terabad says, Revelations 2012 is a fantastic and enriching experience that immerses you into the chaos of the Mayan revelations. And it's a quote from Valid Gaming. It's like, this review came from good reviews.
Not fake.com.
So yeah, exactly. So the 4-pack is on.
I've noticed
$10. So I think we need to buy it and do a Nitro Beer playthrough.
I've noticed.
I think we suggested this actually.
Yeah. Yes, we did.
I've noticed some stuff like that lately. Like I was looking up. I always look at the daily deal on Steam just to see what it is. And I think yesterday or the day before there was some hotel management. And I was like, okay, this seems funny. I want to see what the Metacritic is. And it's like 40, you know, like a 40 out of 100. And I was like, oh boy. So I went to go read some of the Metacritic reviews. And one of them, the exact quote is, the pros of Hotel Giant 2 are outweighed by some of its cons. Most notably, the repetitive and non-engaging nature of the gameplay. It's like, well, that's kind of all of it, right? Like, it is a video game. It's like, I really like this book. I just wish it had words in it.
Right, yeah, exactly. I would just wish it didn't have the same word over and over and over again.
This book could have really been improved by a good story and or good writing.
Yeah, by decent prose and a good use of parsing.
I wish I had gotten it in English.
It also could have had better dialogue.
That pretty famous Gears of War review where like the entire first five paragraphs are how much the guy doesn't like the game, and then it's like A plus for the grade.
Sure, or it's like any World War II game, but they always open it up like, oh no, get out your M1 Garand, we're back at World War II. And you're like, oh fuck, here we go.
I'm sympathetic because when writing a review, it's so easy to just talk about what you don't like.
Yeah.
But I mean, you need to edit that to be better.
That's the Fox News approach.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not sure what that means.
I just love the stinger to this to the CNN article. Super Mario just isn't so super anymore.
Right. So isn't
that already a million seller?
This article on CNET that we're talking about is titled "What Nintendo Needs to Do to Make a Comeback." Can the Wii U fix Nintendo's problems, or will the comeback company have to do something?
Yeah,
more
there's the market leader in both areas.
Nintendo's been on a steady decline for the last 4 years.
What
happened to Nintendo, a company that's been around for 123 years? A variety of trends have dramatically changed the gaming industry over the last 5 years.
That Nintendo made.
Nintendo, I love these words. Nintendo needs a one-up mushroom.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, I mean, this we're burning podcast here, but you take a look at the graph that's down there, and you say, okay, yeah, it looks like in dire straits, but back in, like, 2008, like, they were selling, like, 15 Wiis, like, a second, but it's like, there's no one left to sell a Wii to. What the fuck can you do?
Exactly.
Oh, by the way, Faith in Humanity Restored, that Forbes article, there's like 20 comments of people just schooling this guy on what a moron he's being. And also pointing out that Smash Brothers is going to be on 3DS and Wii U and apparently interoperable. So his whole argument about that not happening is bullshit because it is happening.
And I agree to a certain extent that
they're all hidden by editor.
Oh, yeah.
The only comment they show is the one that agrees with them.
Right.
I think that the 3DS probably did need a second analog stick, but it needed it in 2010, not now.
Right.
There's no way they were going to reveal a new one that had that in there, because that fractures the market to a way that would have done much more damage to them than otherwise.
Sure.
Yeah, a lot of these people are pointing out the 32X and the Sega CD and why you don't want to segment your market.
Look at the PSP. When they added more RAM, there wasn't anything anyone could do with it. Like, they made loading faster, but you couldn't make better games.
Right, exactly.
Because you still had to assume that there were 15 million people out there that had an original PSP.
Or the insane restrictions on Xbox Live Arcade for the longest time, because they still had to support users who were using the Flash ROM.
Or when Xbox Live itself, they still had to support Halo 2 for the longest time. And that's why they couldn't just, like, bump up the number of people you could have on your list.
Bump, bump, bump.
Yeah, but we're the episode 91. I'm Wes Gardner, your host for tonight's proceedings. Right over there, we got Brian Belita.
I'm Poonlarp Phantom of Bumrung.
What?
We got Mark Bradshaw.
Hey guys, got some good news. I have exclusive access to the Mass Effect 3 ending DLC.
Is it good?
It sucks balls.
Oh, we have Matt Pierce.
I have exclusive access to cold pizza, and it's awesome.
Oh, that sounds a lot better than that.
I went in.
And that's the perks of being in the press. And we have Mr. Imran Khan.
I was not killed by a tiny Asian girl last night.
Thank God.
Okay,
This is a terrifying story. This is some, like, you're going to be dead in 7 days shit.
So, I was, like, last night, a couple days ago, my mother went out of the country, and she said she was going to call me when she gets off her flight. So around midnight last night, I get a blocked call on my phone. I'm like, okay, this is probably her. Mm-hmm. I answer it, and this woman's, like, very high-pitched Asian voice, like, thick accent, but you know that kind of voice that is just, it sounds like a child, but it's very obviously a woman?
Right.
Yeah, I hear that, and I can't tell if she's speaking English or what, but she says something, and I'm like, pardon? And she repeats it the exact same way. Like, if you had a tape recorder, it could not have sounded more perfect, a reproduction. So I was like, okay, I think you have the wrong number. Then she says something else, and I still don't know if it's English, so I assume she just understood that fact. I hung up.
Yiddish, probably.
Probably the Asian Jews are trying to kill me.
The Asian Jews telemarketers are a huge issue.
Yep.
If they understood time zones. But so 12, 15 minutes later, I get another call, block number. I figure, okay, I need to make this woman understand at this point that she's got the wrong number or she's going to be calling me all night. So I enter it, I say hello, and I hear a bunch of shuffling. No voices whatsoever, but, like, it sounds like a struggle. And then I was like, you have the wrong number again. And then, like, there was maybe about two beats, and she says, with much less of an accent, and clearly English this time, but I have something for you. And I hung the fuck up right there.
The fuck?
Because I was like, what the hell just happened?
I have something for you.
Meanwhile, she's probably handing her kid, like, a lollipop.
Right.
Or she has a loved one's head in a box to deliver to him. Whichever one.
What's in the box?
Like, I put this on Reddit, and people were like, yeah, people are probably just playing pranks on you. I'm like, no, no one I know would have done that, and they wouldn't have a block number. And
Do you know anyone who would have any reason to harm you? I'm trying to play the CSI point now.
Sony?
Maybe a tiny Asian Jewish woman.
I believe it.
Name Sony.
Yes.
I mean, you've seen Kazirai.
It's all right.
It's possible you've made enough enemies on Gaff that one of them's willing to at least fuck with you.
I thought who's going to find my number?
It's the internet. You can find anything.
Let's just type this into white. Shocking Alberto, or is that supposed to be secret information that you are shocking Alberto?
No, people know.
Or if they're trying to find the cricket player. It was like a stalker for the cricket player.
If I even look up my actual number, there's nothing identifying it to me.
Shocking Alberto, Lord Alberto, Alberto of Impact. Alberto is very powerful, as are all the ten. Able to create what?
I took my name from a direct-to-video thing called Giant Robo.
That's pretty awesome. This one's pretty sweet.
I think it's just good policy to turn off your phone because, you know, people who need to get contact with you, there's better ways than the phone. You know, there's email, there's the internet.
I was waiting on a phone call from my mom, and I don't think she understands what email or internet are yet. I was at my dad's place a couple of weeks ago, and we're just sitting down talking, and he says to me, you know, I think this video game thing is here to stay.
I was really?
Like, yeah. I agree.
Did you ask him when at some point between 1970 and now, he made up his mind on this?
Right. Well, apparently he went to some conference for Dropbox, and they were, like, convincing teachers to use this now, and, like, he met some video game developers there and publishers, and they were like, this is the next thing.
Are they working on gamifying Dropbox?
I think they're just using Dropbox to share assets.
That would make sense, too, I suppose.
Or do they just convince them that they really don't live in cardboard boxes under a bridge somewhere? These are actual jobs.
I think he was still under the belief that it was still 1985 when I first got my NES, and, like, it's just this thing they sell at Toys R Us.
Oh, right. Like, it just plugs straight into your TV and has the 50 games built in one.
Because
but
everyone
every
had that,
works on that.
Everyone had that thing when they were kids where their dad would install their NES and, like, he'd bring the toolbox out, and the only thing they're thinking is something's about to break.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the mindset he's still in these days.
Or, yeah, your parents would stress if you were using the computer for, like, God, what was it, like, Hexen? The very first one. So, like, don't do that. You're going to break the monitor.
Don't install games that you don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows what could be on there?
Yeah, it could be anything.
Don't copy.
Oh, and then the idea of, like, installing something else. Like, here's a Voodoo graphics card. He'd be like, number one, it's named Voodoo. I don't want it in my computer.
Second, look at this box art. It's got a scantily clad enchantress and a dragon, all right? I don't want this near my computer or you.
Get
out. Probably has a virus in it. You got a virus? I'm probably going to catch the virus.
Remember when gaming magazines came with CDs that you would, like, put into your computer? My dad was adamant that why not actually do that?
For the longest time,
I had to, like, sneak away and do it.
Oh, God.
For the longest time, that's how I got my fill of up-to-date gaming news, was every time we went to the dentist, there was a little magazine shop on the way out, and my brother and I would pop in and get, like, you know, PC gaming or some other, I can't remember what the other magazine, and they'd come
like
with, like, the demo disc.
Thick.
And, man, we live for those demo discs, man.
Yeah, man, absolutely.
We're the best. It's like Saturn or the PS1 days. There would be actual discs in a magazine.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to have a magazine.
I'll never forget. I'm fairly sure it was the PC Gamer, but I'll never forget the PC Gamer we had with the giant like the Q logo on it for Quake 1, and it was like, will Quake 1 change the face of gaming?
Sure.
For some reason, that magazine cover in particular sticks in my mind.
I remember
it's weird just, that we can download demos at will now, but nothing will ever have a bigger impact than like a demo I got with a pre-order for Final Fantasy VII.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I played the shit out of that. Like, every day I would just go blow up that Mako reactor over and over again.
Yeah, man. Absolutely.
Or like they would put exclusive demos with games, which you see a little bit of now nowadays, but back in like when they're first putting stuff on CD and you just had so much space to work with, they would just do it whenever. So the big selling point for Tobal number one, maybe Tobal number one?
Yeah, Tobal is that it had the Final Fantasy VII demo.
And to be honest, I would not own that piece of shit game if it was not for the Final Fantasy VII demo.
Oh, Final Fantasy VIII, sorry, because I remember renting that game simply before that.
Yeah. What? No, it was seven. I had seven.
No, was Sephiroth was in there as a character you could play in the fighting game.
No, that was Irgis.
Yeah, I had the disc.
Was it? Yeah, hey, you're right.
Irgis.
Oh, it was seven.
What did eight come with? Might be one of the Bushido Blades?
Might have been.
Or maybe even Tobal 2. Did we get Tobal 2? I don't think we
did not get Tobal 2. They did not bring it over. Which is a shame because it was actually apparently pretty great, like a very big improvement.
I think I found the magazine cover that I was talking about. It says, the most important PC game ever, Quake. And then there's like this cartoon lion playing soccer beneath it.
Oh, yeah.
I like how this cover is just like an obituary of things EA has killed.
Pandora Detective Theme Hospital Earthsiege 2 Euro 96 Actua 2.
Earthsiege 2 is probably something Microsoft or EA has killed at some given point in time.
Oh my god, keyboard overlays.
Yes!
I remember this now. This is
free Top Gun keyboard overlay.
Hopefully, this keyboard will fit your keyboard.
Yeah, there's too much variance in it now, but still, a Top Gun keyboard overlay, I would never take that off.
Ever.
I just use it for everything. Just playing Left 4 Dead. Oh man, Fox 1!
Yeah, it's on the pitch and yaw. Just hit it. Hit the pitch and the yaw. Get over to the zombies.
So not to try to upstage Imran's own scary telephone story, but I did have one I could relate from this weekend. And it comes from the fact that I don't actually pick up my phone. My mom calls me, like, way too much for, like, any reasonable discussion we could possibly have. And it's like, she'll call, and we'll talk for an hour, and then, like, the next day she'll try to call again. And it's like, we don't have enough stuff to talk about.
Nothing new happened. I was not kidnapped.
Nothing happened.
Yeah, no nothing big happened. News happened.
And, like, we speak for an hour, and, like, I'm good for a month. But my mom misses me, so she's going to keep on calling me. And we just have an understanding. It's like, I'm not going to pick up the phone. It's not because I hate you, but it's because I have other things to do. And to be honest with you, we run out of things to talk about.
Right.
So, like, 3 weeks pass, and I see she keeps trying to tell me. She's trying to call me. And it's over and over again. So, you know, at some point, I've got to break down. I've got to either pick up this phone when she calls, or I've got to call her so I won't feel like an enormous jerk. So, so the weekend goes by, and of course, I don't have my phone turned on at all. And I pick it up and see an 828 number, area code, and 828 is North Carolina. And the only person in North Carolina who calls me is my mom. Like, all my friends in North Carolina, they know to contact me via email or through text or whatever. And, like, nobody calls me, or they go through Facebook. I'm saying, oh, shit. My mom's probably dead, and someone's trying to tell me this.
Right.
I really feel like a jerk now, because there's literally no other reason for any other North Carolina number to call me. So I call back in the voicemail, and it's my mom trying to trick me. I am calling from her church. And she knows there's no reason for me to call her back. And, you know, she's not going to admit she's trying to trick me. She did this, so she thought that if she thought that it was coming from a different number, that I'd pick up the phone. No, she decided to call from her church in a concerted attempt to trick me into picking up the phone.
And Mark promptly, after hanging up, called back from a separate number of his, stating that, sorry, ma'am, your son is in a coma.
No, you don't want to do that to my mom because she is tiny and frail and it will kill her. So
she'll be on the first bus in New York.
No, she can't get on a bus. She can't drive. I don't tell my mom anything about my life. That's why there's nothing for us to talk about.
Right.
Because it would just... She's just so nervous about everything. Like, she never learned how to drive. She, like, grew up in the Depression.
Oh, just, yeah. You're on that radio show. Don't put the headset on for too long. I don't know why mom's Jewish, but yeah. Put your headset on for too long because it might compress the brain cells.
Imagine that. Imagine a sweet little Southern voice coming out of it instead of the Jewish voice. That is exactly what we're talking about.
It's the same voice that told Imran, "I have something for you."
Wait, so maybe Mark's mom is trying to call me to get Mark
to
call her back.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You know what? She's devious. She would do that.
And really, what she was saying is that she was bartering for relaying of messages between her and Mark.
Oh, man.
I have something
to get hard
for
candies.
You.
God, now I feel sad.
Werther's original.
Oh, God, now I feel bad. Anyway, my mom's kind of a dick, and that was my story.
Whoa.
The too long didn't read version.
Do you have a mom that's a dick? Send her email.
Yeah, if you have stories about your parents being dicks. All right, so...
Man, let's talk about some...
Yeah, that's weird, man.
I hope I'm not a dick. What were we going to say, Wes?
Well, there's some stuff to talk about. We got the news about that Mass Effect 3 DLC... what else do we have to talk about? I know there's quite a few things we have to cover.
You know, at the time, like, everyone was all in uproar about Mass Effect 3 ending and, like, if they're going to change it or not. And now, like, I guess they put out this announcement that it's coming. And it seems like nobody really cares at this point.
Because it's been too long.
It's not going to change things, really. The canon ending is what was on that disc. They fucked up then.
Yeah.
Just, you know, applying plaster to it doesn't really make it better.
Well, that's, one of my things about BioWare is, you know, BioWare's biggest mistakes lately have been thinking the decisions they made were good decisions. Not the fact that, well, now we can change it with DLC, but, like, the fact that Dragon Age 2 got made in the first place was the mistake. Like, in my opinion, that was the mistake they made. But then people try to cover it up. Well, now they just, you know, they're not making enough DLC for it. Which was an actual complaint I heard about Dragon Age 2, and that blew my mind.
You don't want more of that game.
Well, I didn't want any of that game. That's the point. I didn't want any of it. None of it. But yeah, like, and the whole thing, well, they need to fix the ending of Mass Effect 3. And I was like, no, they need to fix the point that they thought their ending was good in Mass Effect 3. Like, they got to that point. You know.
Yeah, but they're not going to fix that because it's a corporate mentality thing. And they were convinced that – they're still convinced that ending's good. They're just shoving stuff in there to try and explain why they thought it was good.
Right.
They at least never say they're going to change the ending. They say they're going to clarify it.
Yeah, and didn't –
Right, so now there's going to be a reason why Joker has decided to take the Normandy 2 into hyperspace for no damn reason.
And, like – but it's weird because Casey Hudson made a quote like – we would love to actually change the ending but we can't because it's not our story.
What?
It is your story.
Yeah.
You wrote it.
Are they right. Referring to the writer?
No, I mean, like, literally, I think they were trying to deal, well, Mass Effect is about your character, so it's not our story.
No, I saw the ending. It's not actually about us at all. It's about their stupid idea. If it was about us, my decisions I would have made for the past 5 years would have had some impact over what happened. It's not our story. It's your story, you assholes.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. That's why I'm talking they made the mistake. They give this perception that you have a choice to make, and you never did in the first place. So just be honest about it.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. That's weird.
Part of me wonders if, like, they just expected to have the ending out there and then sell DLC for the next year and then maybe later fix it. They didn't expect the huge backlash of having a shitty ending.
Well, they expected to get away with the we're going to ask more questions than we give answers ending. But for a series like that, it doesn't work. I mean, for something like Battlestar or Lost or, you know, The Wire or something, that works. That type of ending is great. Even Sopranos. Sopranos pissed some people off, but it worked. Like, the way that ending happened is the only way it could have ended. Even though it made people mad, but they still understood, okay, yeah, that is a good ending. I just don't agree with how it happened.
You know what the good thing was? It was an ending.
Yes.
It was coherent.
It was
fun. And you could, that's not anything like what happened in Mass Effect 3.
Right.
Well, I don't need to, like, at the end of a game, I don't need to feel that it was, everything was wrapped up, but I do need to feel like the game designers aren't trying to insult my intelligence. Like, yeah. In the way Mass Effect 3 worked, where every single ending was basically the same, then, I mean, that just shows they put no effort into making sure this is a satisfying conclusion.
Right.
You guys have had years to make this game. This ending should have been planned out from day one of Mass Effect 1.
Yeah, I agree.
And yet, it just, you know, it's three separate FMVs.
Yeah, there's no way they set forth. Yeah, there's no way they set forth back in, I don't know, what, year 2000 or whatever, when they first started writing Mass Effect. And so, okay, this is the end point. There's going to be a Star Child, and there's going to be this computer, I guess, and explosions. There's no right, way, like, that was their end game.
That they can, it's basically confirmation that they did not give a shit back then, and they kept telling us they did.
Yeah. It's my understanding that people had the same issue with the ending to Lost, where it became because I never actually watched Lost, because fuck that thing. But where they felt that, they felt they were, like, being drug along the entire time and just fooled, and then the ending came along, and this, it was obvious that no one knew what was going on.
Well,
the thing about Lost is that, like, it's a TV show, so they have to deal with actors constantly coming and going and getting older. So characters that were important at one point, then seven seasons later are, like, teenagers, and you can't use them in a show that spans, like, a year.
Exactly. And the weird thing is with Lost, I love the ending, but hated the last two seasons. But I thought the ending was the best part of it. I was like, this ending's perfect. It's exactly what it should be. But then people got so caught up in this minutia of, like, they didn't explain in episode 42 whenever the doctor said that,
I can't have a series that is about asking questions and then just say, you know what, fuck it. No questions, whatever. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's a good point, because that was the entire hook of the series, right? Because they had all these details, they're building all this mystery, kind of like how Mass Effect 3 does. They built this universe, and they kept adding on questions, they kept adding on things, and in the end, they just pull the plug and say, well, we're not going to explain anything to you. None of it made sense.
Right.
Well, that's insulting, and you're basically going back on the premise of your own story.
Well, that's the one problem with Mass Effect 3's ending, is that it explains some things to you, but those explanations are incredibly stupid.
Yeah.
Like, and
they're just thrown out there, like, oh yeah, by the way, this has been a Reaper cycle for a couple of generations. I mean,
and
there was nothing indicating this, but whatever.
I'm the biggest fan of Metal Gear Solid, and that has the stupidest story in the world, but at least it contextually makes sense with the rest of its madness. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there was a spoiler for Metal Gear Solid 4. Whenever Liquid Snake had, you know, his arm grafted onto Revolver Ocelot, that worked not because Revolver Ocelot's DNA, you know, his dad was some sort of psychic and that it linked their two spirits together. No, no, no. He hypnotized himself to pretend to be Liquid Snake.
Right.
Well, it's just as fucking stupid as anything else.
Because it takes the last couple of games, and it basically says none of this matters.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. But then
that's the way you don't want to do an ending. Like L.A. Noire. If we reach a spoiler limit on that, can we talk about
Homicide? Yeah, we can talk. It's been here.
Yeah, they will go ahead.
So Homicide is the best part of that game, but then you find out at the end that nothing you did up until then mattered.
Yeah.
You got the wrong guy in every single case.
Yeah.
And at that point, like, why do you care? What investment do you have in this game anymore?
Now, I was trying to remember if it touches back on that later, or if it just, like, I could understand, like, the entire point of Homicide being completely screwed up, and if you go back and you resolve that later. But it's my from what I remember about that game, because I tried to block so much of it out thanks to the ending of that stupid thing, I don't think that really touches back again, does it? Because the crazy arsonist from the arson thing is just some crazy dude who just sets things on fire for the insurance company. But I don't think
that they happen to know in the war.
Yeah, that they happen to know in the war, because it's a video game, so everything's connected, because you can't know more than five people in a video game, I guess.
All that face modeling is hard.
Yeah, so I don't think they went back to actually resolve what happened in the Homicide desk.
No, they basically just end it with Cole dying. Oh no, spoilers. Oh, yeah. The Rockstar protagonist dies.
Oh darn.
By the way, if you're actually right now playing LA Noir, we apologize, but once you get what happens last, is it Vice or Homicide that's let's last? Because you at least play through Vice.
There was Vice, then there was Arson.
Okay, play through Vice because it actually has the best character in the game, which is your jerk partner, which is also how it usually works in a Rockstar game, where the best character is a periphery guy. Just play through that and walk away and say, you know what, that was a great game, and you have so much more fun, and you enjoy that game so much more because it turns into Gears of War. And not kidding here, this thing turns into Gears of War, and there's a dude with a flamethrower, and there's a flamethrower boss.
That's being generous. I'd say it turns into Quantum of Solace at that point. Or not Quantum of
Solace. I'm not saying like gameplay-wise, like in quality of gameplay. It's no. It turns into a cover-based shooter, a very generic cover-based shooter, which is why I use Gears, which shouldn't like disparage Gears that much.
There's a point where like you're being chased by God. What was it? A landfill thing, or I can't think of the word.
Yeah.
Construction equipment, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, the bulldozer.
It's chasing you down a narrow trench, and if you turned left or right at any point, you could get away.
Yeah.
But nope. If you try that, the game just like auto fails. It's like nope. Yeah. You didn't get away in time.
Oh man.
Sorry.
Oh. But yeah, it just doesn't make sense that they would have to go back and do Mass Effect 3, expanding on it. It's not. They're not even changing the ending. They're just explaining more about the ending.
They have more Mass Effect products in the gate are waiting, and they can't reveal them while everyone's still pissed about Mass Effect 3.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's going on. So, I mean, hopefully there's actual content in this, like stuff you can actually play, because I would actually like to play more Mass Effect 3. Like, as much as we disparage the ending, like, the game itself, while not actually like an RPG in any sense of anything recognizable, it's a good game.
Mm-hmm. If it's just like load your last save file and watch the new ending, I'm just gonna YouTube. There's no point in wasting 2 gigs of bandwidth on that.
Yeah, and you know, or your hard drive space for those of us still rocking the 20 gig. But I think that's exactly what's going to happen. That's 2 gigs of FMV.
You only have a 20 gig hard drive?
Yeah, but it's a launched system, dude.
Oh. I thought you meant on your PC. Never mind. Like, how do you even install Windows?
that's the goofy part about it. Like the first hard drive. Well, not the first hard drive I had, but the first, like the second machine I ever built back in 1990, whatever, had a 20 gig hard drive, and this Xbox 360 had a 20 gig hard drive.
My first computer, this POS Compact Presario, had a 1 gig hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I can now carry around something the size of my thumbnail that has 16 times the size of that.
Yeah, you know, if somebody handed me a 1 gig like thumb drive, I would throw it away.
Yeah, because they do hand that to you on the street. These things are basically worth nothing.
I have a box full of them on my desk at work. It's labeled floppies. Some of the students don't know why it's labeled floppies.
Do kids even
or they don't know
floppy?
Why the same thing.
Hell, they weren't floppy anymore by the time I made it to college. So
I remember even in high school, I was using you know, those smaller disks that were not floppies.
I have seen kind of a picture that probably explains this. I bet it's someone's idea of a joke, but it was just a floppy disk on a desk, and then a note next to it that says, "Why was your post-it note so hard?" So that's pretty much, I bet that it was probably framed that way, but even so, it probably makes sense for...
For early 90s computer humor.
Yeah, oh yeah.
No, I remember coming across a floppy disk like in elementary school with our Apple IIe's, and past that, done.
Mm-hmm.
That was my home computer until the late 90s. Yeah. The Apple IIe.
Was that the one that they actually kind of pushed gaming with? Because I know one of the Apple IIs was kind of. Yeah.
The Apple IIe, the E stands for education. It's the one they had. Sold to all the schools.
Oh,
so there were games you could play on it, but they were all like really shitty educational
which
games.
Karateka
too. Prince of Persia.
They're making a remake of Karateka. For some reason.
Yeah, that's right. That's the thing that's being worked on.
Jordan Mechner is making one.
They should make a remake of that for iPhone because it's, you know, slow, unresponsive, doesn't really require you.
That's a good point.
I mean, Jordan Mechner is like probably a rock star of game development, but that describes most of his games. They're slow, unresponsive, platformers.
They were awesome at the time.
Yeah.
Well, he was but making like, platformers if, for a PC, so.
Yeah. If you go back and try to play Prince of Persia on XBLA or something, it's like that's not a fun game to play.
No, it's it's not, but it was entirely because of the motion capture, and people said, "Oh my god, this is revolutionary." So, well, it's kind of bad. But no one's going to say that. Chrome. Yeah. Now, I remember playing Karateka for my Atari 7800. Just terribly disappointed when I finally got that thing home, because it's awful, awful video game.
You played Karateka on your Atari 2600?
Atari.
Yes, it was a 7800, actually, because 2600 absolutely could not handle that little level of gaming.
Those number of colors.
Yes.
I was making fun of your pronunciation. I'm sorry, Mark.
That's not a problem.
Let's see. Do we have any more news to go over before we take a break? Or do we want to take a break and then talk about what we've been playing?
We can hit on those...
Yep.
You hit on those two articles about how Nintendo apparently makes you stupid.
Oh,
well,
God.
Nintendo makes you stupid?
CNET and Forbes. Dumb as rocks.
Yeah.
See, I don't think it was dumb. I think they knew what they were doing, and they were hoping nobody would notice.
You think this is link baiting?
I don't know if it's link baiting. I think it's just they're trying to make an argument, and they wanted numbers. Yeah. But the numbers didn't necessarily bear out what they wanted to say.
To make the argument, you have to ignore really important and massive things. Yeah. Like this, the CNET article, what Nintendo needs to make a comeback. First of all, the Wii is pretty much the top-selling console of the generation. The DS was the top-selling, well, is still the top-selling portable device. Mm. And the 3DS, when you do launch a line, is pretty close.
Yeah.
Well, it's not doing bad at all.
Well, they're able to take a look at the numbers because we're in transition right now. So taking this, well, the Wii is failing next to the 360. Well, the Wii's failing next to the 360 because they sold a Wii to every human being on the planet who was interested in buying a Wii, whereas the 360 is now a Netflix box. Right. So it's really fair.
At this point, it's a legacy system.
Yeah.
There's no successor out yet, but, I mean, clearly they're not going to make any more real games for that. No system or no software to drive the hardware.
Right. And it doesn't help matters that all businesses care about is year-over-year growth. And, yeah, once you sell something to everybody, you can't sell it to everybody again, you know, unless it breaks like a 360 and then you just give someone else another one. But yeah, like that's the dangers of going year-over-year growth, right?
Yeah, and then talking about how the 3DS is clearly doomed because mobile gaming and social gaming, ignoring that both of those leave developers mostly bankrupt.
Yeah.
Most developers who get into that space either do it by virtue of being successful in other gaming arenas, or they go belly up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is the profits just aren't there.
Well, there's also the bigger thing with this CNET, the CNET article. It dings the 3DS for selling 17 million units, which, you know, that sounds decent for like the year it's been on the market, I think, year and a half maybe. But it says this is a failure compared to the 150 million units that regular DS sold. The
DS has been out, what, 7 years now?
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
2004.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was still in... Yeah, that's... Yeah, okay. Thinking of where I lived, it's like, wait a second, I played a DS right out of college. So that's
in like November 2004.
Yeah.
And, like, Nintendo still hasn't made, like, a really good argument for owning a 3DS, where, you know, at this point, like, the DS was still waiting for, like, its brain age and its Nintendogs and stuff. Whereas, you know, the 3DS is going to get that at some point. At some point, they're going to put a Pokemon out for it, and, you know, it's going to sell 20 million units. So
I think
yeah.
It's not a coincidence they're launching a revision the same day as New Super Mario Brothers 2.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
That was exactly what they did with the DS. The right. DS Lite came out the same day as the original New Super Mario Brothers. And that game went on to sell 40 million copies.
Which is crazy.
Yep.
It's crazy. Like,
I believe if you cut the New Super Mario Brothers series and just even ignore every other Mario game, it is the best-selling game of the generation. Or best-selling series.
Yeah. That's nuts.
And so this other article on Forbes,
about titled Nintendo Have Missed the Boat on Connective Gaming with the 3DS XL, basically saying that the 3DS XL is a big failure because it doesn't have the features that the Vita has, which are working out so well, I guess.
Yeah, the features of the Vita that they're not using. Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
I mean, it would be great if it had those things, but they wouldn't have those things for $200.
Right.
I was going to say, not only that, but I mean, then you're, you know, like a lot of people are seeing with the games that are playable both on the PS3 and the Vita, you're limited by the Vita's memory and storage and graphic capabilities. You know, the 3DS and the Wii U are an even larger gulf.
Mm-hmm. Right. Can I say, Golden Abyss does not look as good as Uncharted 3. There's no getting around that.
It never would. The Vita is not a PS3, a handheld PS3, and Sony was probably mistaken to sell it as such, because there's absolutely no way for the developers to live up to that.
They've been doubling down on that, and I look at that and I shake my head, because there's no way that it's going to work out. Like, I have a PS3 and I have a Vita, but I haven't bought any cross-platform games, because I don't really care about that.
Right. All it does is farm the PS3, because now if you're going to target both of them, you got to target the Vita.
I think what they don't get is that handheld gaming has moved from nobody's carrying a Vita out with them. If they want a Vita, they're buying it to mostly play at home.
Sure.
Yeah.
And they think that for some reason the portability of a PS3 game is what's important.
The Forbes article also states that the 3DS XL missed the boat on not having the second analog stick, which is kind of insane, because that means the 3DS XL would become its own system that's not actually compatible with the 3DS.
Yep.
I mean, and more to the point, that argument doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because obviously they're going to make an analog stick add-on, and if you're using it as a peripheral for the Wii U, is this really going to stop you? If you want to use that second analog stick, just get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this guy also dings the 3DS for... his quote is, if you're hoping to use the 3DS as double duty as a Wii controller or Wii U controller, it's not going to happen. Well, who wanted that?
Yeah, whoever asked for that
at all? It comes with a controller with a 6-inch touchscreen in it. Did we really need to connect up two more screens to this thing?
And the Wii U controller is like way higher resolution than the 3DS screen could feasibly be, and still keep it like not cost $250.
Right.
And most importantly, something that's kind of being missed here, the Wii U controller is not drawing its own graphics. It's receiving a video signal from the console.
And the latency on like a handheld console thing would probably just kill it. That thing was designed to subvert latency, I suppose.
Well, not only that,
say, hey, 3DS, now you connect the same way.
Yeah, the 3DS probably wouldn't be able to handle that sort of bandwidth with its wireless transmitters. But even if it could, I mean, the way you do that with a handheld is you'd have it a legitimate handheld console is you'd have it render its own stuff, which means you're then again limited by what that portable device is capable of drawing, not what the console's capable of drawing.
It's just kind of weird that this guy is trying to confabulate the Vita, which no one is making games for because it's an enormous failure and Sony left it to die. And we know this at E3 because they didn't mention the damn thing hardly at all. And the 3DS, which has a future because we know it has a future, because Nintendo has to have that thing succeed if they want to stay in business. So we know the 3DS is going to be fine.
Well, they spent like 3 conferences talking about the 3DS at this point in the last month. Yeah. So at this point, they're committed.
They absolutely have to be. And that's in the end, that's why, you know, you're safe buying a Nintendo handheld, regardless of what handheld it is, except it's the Virtual Boy. We won't go into that because that was a huge mistake. But, you know, it's how do you conflate that? But it's also a larger issue in that we have this guy from Forbes. We have this guy from CNET. Earlier this week, this month at E3, we had the CNN guy who was saying that the Wii U was an attachment for the Wii. It's just, okay, let's just throw out the whole Nintendo confabulation, whatever. All you have to do is, like, 5 minutes of research. Wikipedia, GAF, GNT. What, a joystick, Kotaku, whatever.
Or hell, watch the goddamn conference where they have the controller and the console on stage at the same time.
Isn't it kind of hilarious that they think that the Wii U is an add-on, but they also want the 3DS to be an add-on to the Wii U?
Sure, yeah, like, that gets into a whole different deal. And the reason why I think it's dangerous for people like, you know, CNET and Forbes to talk this way, because, I mean, to be fair, when are we ever going to fucking go to Forbes for video game news? Never. But people that don't look for video game news usually are going to be reading either CNET or Forbes. I mean, it's just one of those things. And
it's a respectable publication.
Well, sure. But to spread that type of message, misinforming people based on a source that's usually fairly informed, for at least for us, and I know for me, at least calls into question, well, Forbes is this fucking wrong about this. Right. What else are they really wrong about? Like,
the thing is, they hire people with bachelors in communications and writing, and the people who know a lot about video games don't have those degrees.
Yeah.
They're happy working for their IGNs or Kotakus or whatever that lets them say whatever shitty thing they want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, like one of the things, this Forbes article, I mean, one of the things he keeps talking about why the Wii U's or why the 3DS missed it on connectivity is that, you know, the smart glasses coming and Microsoft has set up Xbox Live with some sort of hobby developer scheme that will let you play their games on every single one of the Microsoft devices. It's like, yes, Xbox Live indie games have been around for a long time and it's not that successful.
Yeah.
The best part of that article was him proving that Smart Glass was helping Microsoft by showing that last month's 360 sales were year over year better than the year before.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And it's like, oh.
Because you know that's what people were doing when they would go over to the Target and say, oh my God, we got the Smart Glass. All I have to do is wait a year for the Microsoft tablet to come out so I can watch Game of Thrones at the same time.
Yeah. His sales points were before Smart Glass was announced.
Right. Yeah. Right. Great. Terrific. It's just, you know, this guy and, you know, the rest of them, this is their living. This is their calling. There is someone cutting a check to these people to do what they do. We are five idiots who just bullshit about games.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, fine. Like, we also have our own personal lives. We have jobs. We have things we have to take care of. It's like, you know, gaming is our hobby, but it's also a periphery thing, right?
Yeah. And
it's not actually something we do to make a living. It's something we would like to do for a living.
Sure.
No doubt. But it's like, okay, of like an eight of a 24-hour day, eight's sleeping, eight's at work. Okay, I've got three I can dedicate to like checking out news and stuff. I know what the hell I'm doing more than any of these people.
Yeah, which is terrifying to think about. Yeah, this is their livelihood. They get paid to be
this. Yeah, this is a career.
Oh. Yeah. So weird.
More frustrating is that these people get to talk to the PR for these companies.
Yeah, they get shown exclusive
things. They get access.
Yeah. Come behind,
and they still have no freaking clue what they're reporting on.
Come behind these red velvet curtains, dude, from Forbes, so you can misquote everything I say. And like,
well, it's strange because like I've been doing more investigative journalism at Sega for the last week than any of these guys have.
Yeah.
Yet none of them are writing stories. It's crazy because that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
About what the financial problems Sega's been having, or
their localization has basically shut down for the rest of the year.
Right.
They have Rhythm Thief left and probably some other things that they've already paid for, but they can't afford to print discs anymore.
Was this brought about by the Anarchy Reigns issue or something else?
No, Anarchy Reigns is a casualty of that issue. That they need to take out a loan and no one's giving them a loan to actually play this game.
Man.
So they had no money to print discs.
Nope. Rhythm Thief they paid Nintendo for already. Because Nintendo prints 3DS cards.
Wow. So is this like a Sega of America thing? Or like a Sega Worldwide thing? Or
Sega Worldwide is suffering, but Sega of America is taking the brunt of it. And Sega of Europe is collapsing slowly, but they're trying to get people to look the other way. That's why you're seeing stuff like, you know, they're making a big deal about the Sonic game this year being Sonic Adventure 2 XBLA.
Right.
Because they can't afford anything else. That's the thing with it now.
Man.
Poor
Sega. That's depressing.
Yeah. And with that depressing note, we have all this booze here, and we'll drink ourselves into a stupor during the break.
All right. Break time.
It's episode 91 still. You didn't, like, travel into the past or the future or anything. We're still here, and we're still joined by the gang, but I think we got a special thing from Brian Belita.
Let's do a Kotaku Headlines Roundup.
Oh, no.
All right, here we go. There are wine glasses, and then there are vine glasses.
Oh, fuck.
And it's got two wine glasses that look like the piranha plants from Mario Brothers eating a goblet. Yep. All right, here we go. Dead or Alive 5 couldn't have picked a better time to roll out the pre-order swimsuits.
Ooh. Well, let's take a look at that. Let's.
I guess because it's summer.
Yeah, that's some Dead or Alive 5 swimsuits.
We got the official new Mass Effect 3 ending can't be as good as these fan fiction ones.
Oh, no.
Well, we proved that with a Mass Effect 3 first
ending. I already am. All right, we got Fake Gamer of the Week. Don't laugh, she never learned how to use a couch.
Somebody linked me to that, and it's actually pretty funny, because it's like this girl modeling on a couch, but she's like silly. On her elbows and knees for some reason.
Like, yeah. Ass up in the air, yeah.
Yeah, doing like overtly sexy like poses, like if you walked in your girlfriend or wife or whatever doing this, she'd ask, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
All right, I got poison ivy on my ass.
Yeah. It's like, you're going to hurt your spine, babe. Stop that.
Speaking of endings of Mass Effect 3, we have, did Journey blow its ending?
What?
What?
Did
Journey have an ending?
It has an ending.
I guess
are they
because
just now getting to the ending of Journey?
Maybe. I don't know. Let's see. We got study. China says minors are learning about sex from video games.
We gotta learn about some somewhere, so sure.
And then finally, it looks like Final Fantasy, but with way more nudity and sex.
You know, you have to be... I'd hate to imagine there's a generation of kids growing up learning about sex through video games. Because this is absolutely the worst venue to learn how to learn sex. Like,
I mean, they're clearly learning about sex from porn.
Yeah,
no one's learning about it from video games.
Yeah.
I don't know, so, maybe China like really firewalls the porn, though. So yeah. Maybe this is the only outlet.
So with that, I actually have to take off and leave you guys to finish up the Beardcast. But man, we got 8 more episodes until... No, wait, 9 more episodes.
9 more,
until
yeah.
Episode 100.
You should just roll with it, been like, until episode 99.
Yeah. Right, yeah, we got 8 more episodes until episode 99.
We got 2 more episodes until episode 93.
So one more episode away from 100.
But and rumor is big things happening on episode 100.
Who's rumor?
Hey.
I heard that from Wes.
Hey.
That Wes guy.
I heard it from Kotaku.
Kotaku. Does your girlfriend sit on the couch for Nitro Beard episode 100 with her
Nitro Beard episode 100? Episode 99?
Episode 100 is the new Nitro Beard episode 99.
I heard it from Forbes.com, but it was talking about episode 30, and it was from the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast.
Yeah.
So absolutely nothing to do with what was going on here.
Yep.
I'm not sure how we can be respectable when other podcasts have over 100 episodes already.
That's...
Yeah, we should probably just hang it up.
The functionality of 5 people talking.
Well, don't talk about Doritos or Star Wars, okay?
Yeah! Yeah!
Bye!
Instead, I'm going to talk about Cheetos and Civ 5.
Oh. Do you ever notice how a Star Destroyer looks like a giant Dorito?
Oh, shit!
It does.
It does. What flavor Dorito would it be?
Is there a white cheddar one? They should make a white cheddar one.
Germany, they have the flavor Cool American.
It's just an American Eagle with sunglasses on.
It tastes just like an American.
It just smells like Old Spice.
Tastes like Terry Bogard.
Oh. Are you okay?
Which was the one with the hat? Which one did Bogard's got the hat?
It's yeah, it's Terry. Right, right. Terry.
Yeah, it's, okay. I got that right. Fuck you.
God damn it. Oh yeah, but tell us about Civ 5, Mark.
Well, I've been playing the Gods and Kings expansion.
Yes, sir.
And you know, it adds some neat stuff. It is kind of annoying that. Okay, so I've only been playing Civ for the past month, despite like putting like 160 hours into it because it basically eats your soul. So I'm not going to sit here and say I'm like hugely invested into like the Civ 5 scene or anything. Kind of annoying when a developer comes out and just says, well, we're going to totally change the way like you play this video game for no reason, despite the fact that you were happy with the way the video game worked.
Yeah.
There's basically there's four ways you win in Civ. And that's the domination victory, where you go out and like you take out all of your enemies, like capital cities. Mm-hmm. There's the culture victory, where like you just put out a bunch of artists and say, we're really great at making like TV shows and stuff, so you should worship us, which is basically the American way of winning global domination. There's diplomacy, where you bribe everybody else, you build the UN, and they decide that you're the best ever, which is also kind of the American way of winning. And I forgot what the scientific one.
Yeah,
where, science, yeah, where you basically build a spaceship to Alpha Centauri, which may be the Chinese way of winning nowadays. So anyway, what the way Civ 5 worked was that usually the games were won with domination because it was the simplest way to go out there. It's like, mm-hmm. You build an army, and it made sense because, you know, if you're attacking your enemy, you're making your enemy weaker. So, and if you're making your enemy weaker, you're making yourself stronger. So it makes sense to be attacking anyway. So domination was really popular. Or the other way to do it was cultural, where you just, like, build three or four cities, just hang out in your own town, and just keep on building culture and artists and stuff until eventually everybody says, wow, you guys are pretty great. We should name our civilizations after you. So what Firaxis did was they said that wasn't going to work anymore. And they got a culture. So you can't really build up enough culture points anymore. They rejiggered the wonders so they don't give as much culture points. And they also – and this is the really annoying thing to me. They got rid of the culture bomb. So like culture doesn't really do a lot for you anymore. And domination doesn't do a lot for you anymore because like fights take just way too long now.
Yeah.
And if you like, you throw like a grunt against a city, that guy is dead. I mean, the guys on the wall will just like throw down nooses and just hang them. It's just, it's awful what people in cities will do to your poor infantrymen. Which, granted, the infantrymen are trying to take over, so it makes sense. But still, it's kind of unbalanced. Like you absolutely can't take out a city without three or four like siege engines and stuff. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of bad because you still have to have a grunt to actually invade the city. So you have to have one guy sitting on the walls to invade, but if he invades too quickly, he'll die because there's no way to withstand the retaliatory attack from the city.
Right.
So you're screwed. There's just no way to win domination. It takes too damn long.
Have they changed like how economy works because of that? Because it sounds like now you need, even if you're just like, need a defensive army, that you need to spend more money on your military, you know, as opposed to other ways to do it. Like, do you think that's why they took culture down a few notches, or?
Well, they took culture down because it was probably too easy to win. And, you know, culture was something you should be building toward anyway, because, you know, every culture builds through your policies, and it's always best to have more policies. So it makes sense to hurt a way of winning that was also a way of improving your civilization. That makes sense. But it's like way easier to fight defensively because now you just need to like keep some guys out in your hometown, and like you had to throw a ton of guys to take a town down. And they redid navies so that they're not as fast anymore. Like the Trireme. Which used to be like the very early unit, and it was like it could only hang around shores, but it could at least like fight for you. It wasn't a huge deal. But what they do now is like there's there's two different like naval units. There's a melee naval unit and a ranged naval unit. So like you can't just send out like your navy out there to take over a coastal town because there's no range to it. I mean, you can get like your navy ship right up to the town, but of course it's dead because you're right next to the town. They can just attack it from whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's they slowed everything down on that. But like if you want to, like, it doesn't take as much money to build a defensive army, so you can just like keep building defensive guys and just hang out.
Right.
So they didn't really do a lot to diplomacy victories because now there's a lot more ways to make money. And they didn't do a lot to science victories because you still have to go through the same amount of science.
Oh, I see.
To get there. Yeah. Right. So it's not a huge deal. Like, you just win through diplomacy or you win through science.
Sure.
And it's just the biggest thing disappoints is they got rid of the culture bomb. Guys, that was a huge thematic thing for me. It's like you make like Louis Armstrong. Let's say you make Louis Armstrong. And it's totally random who you get. You get Louis Armstrong or Pablo Picasso. I just like the idea of having Louis Armstrong.
You have one or the other. There's no other creative person to ever live.
Yeah, yeah. And that's it. That's all you get in all of humanity. And that's fine. That makes sense. But no, it's like dozens of them. And it's just random who you get. So you would take them out to the front lines of your army. And it'd be awesome because like later in your civilization's like timeline, you put him like this awesome Rolls Royce and he'd like just drive down like into the front lines of your army and hold a concert, and like everything around him would be that he'd have to be inside your territory, but everything you once you pop him, like everything would turn inside your all of the enemy's hexes around him would turn to your hexes. It was great. Yeah. It was great. It was
imagine like if that happened like in the 80s and Geraldo Rivera was overseas and he was like, we were really struggling until Bruce Springsteen showed up and like he kicks down a door.
Now, keep in mind, this is the way Macross works. Like you have the idol singer show up and everybody's happy and they can fight better. And it works great. But it's boring now because now that ability is now built into the great generals and not the great artists. So now you send General Arbor E. Lee out to the front line to build a citadel, and like all those hexes are now your hexes.
That sort of makes more sense, but
it makes more sense, but it's not as much fun. You know,
William Shakespeare's out on the front lines writing, and everyone got a big morale boost.
Yeah, he holds like a theater, you know, and he holds a play, and like all the surrounding sounds like, you know what, this is a good idea. Let's go over here. We're with you guys now. Let's go. Come on.
Now's not the time, Shakespeare. We're getting shot. Yeah.
No, Shakespeare, we need that coal mine. Go over there and convince those miners to come with us. And he'll go over there and he'll build the Globe Theater and they'll be yours. But now it's like Patton comes out and builds a citadel and they take it by force. It's boring. So, I don't know. It's still a good game. Like, still going to play it a lot. Espionage doesn't do a hell of a lot. Like, as soon as you enter the Renaissance Age, you get a spy. And, like, every so many rounds, you get a new spy. And you can send a spy out to a city and, like, rig elections or whatever. But it's very random what you're allowed to do.
Oh, yeah. Because in a lot of 4X games, there are kind of spies or pirates or stuff like that. And a lot of times, those guys are really broken. Because you can manipulate everything around you, which is awesome. But then if you get caught, then it like destroys your relations with whoever whoever it was.
But you have no control. Like you send them to a city, and like if like you're more culture more like scientifically advanced than that city you've invaded, you've sent your spy out to rather, you don't get anything out of it. I mean, you can see what's going on in the city, but you can't actually steal any of their tech. So it's kind of useless.
Right.
Religion is – I'm still trying to figure out exactly how useful religion is.
It was very broken in Civ 4. Like Civ 4, everybody won by religion by default.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that they added it back.
I don't think there's a religious victory. There might be. I mean, like if you can send like missionaries and prophets out to other cities to like convince them to follow your religion, which I think just gives you more faith points, which you can use to buy more guys to invade more cities.
And it also, funnily enough, has an effect on your taxes, which I just kick out of. Like a lot of stuff's either like half taxed or tax free, and it's like
Yeah, you get to like set what kind of like abilities like your religion has in your pantheon and stuff. So I kind of messed up on my game with Attila the Hun. Like, I had no idea you're supposed to build a pantheon. You're supposed to have more than one god. So like, I start off with my default god, and I see like we have a bunch of like incense farms and like wine farm and like vineries. Wine farms.
Yeah.
Vineries. There
we go. Vineyards.
Vineyards. There we go. That's way better word than what I choose. But so, okay, I got a ton of these guys. I can like get the god of like the stivies and stuff, and like for everything I have, vineyards I have, I get more culture. That's okay. This makes sense. I'll use that. I wasn't thinking I could have more than one god, so I set up my Lord of the Dance or Lord of like hedonism or debauchery or whatever, and I said, well, okay, I got this guy. Now I'm going to go ahead and set up my religion, which I set up as Shikism because it's based on swords, and you know, if you're going to have a religion, it should be based on like knives and funny hats. And I wasn't aware that you can have a whole pantheon. So basically, Shikism is based on this one god of debauchery, and Attila the Hun is spreading that out, spreading the word of Shikism and debauchery through the world. And if you don't like that, he'll kill you. Oh, and if you do like it, he'll probably kill you anyway because I need your city.
Right.
Sure. So, yeah, it's kind of disappointing what they did with it. All the wonders do different things now, so you can't really guarantee what kind of wonders you want to build with. The tech tree is just completely blown out of hell. So yeah, it's good. It's $30. I don't know if it's $30 good, but there we go.
Good deal.
I now never want to play Civ.
Oh, here's the thing. Civ 5 is the easiest one to get into.
Yeah.
So it's not a matter of getting into. I feel like I've just gotten the entire gameplay experience right in the last
but that's
10 minutes.
Pretty much it. It's about, yeah, there was that news article that guy was playing Civ 2 for 10 years. Like, he has one game going on for 10 years, and that's easily doable. I don't know why that would really happen, because now it's like a dilapidated, like, husk of a civilization, but...
Yeah, basically it's like three civilizations left standing, and they all keep firing nuclear missiles at each other, and nobody can.
Nobody wins. They're all to stand.
I mean, if you're like a year into that game, there's no point in quitting at that point. Just keep lean into it.
Keep it going. Yeah, yeah. But yeah. Let's see.
But yeah, it's summer, so nothing's out.
Right. So that's kind of a perfect game to play for summer. Is one of those that can just take a lot of time. It's just a big media experience that has a lot to offer.
We do have the Steam sale coming up.
Yes, so we do. When is it going to start?
This Thursday, probably.
Yeah.
Because they have the Meet the Pyro thing on Adult Swim on Wednesday, which I assume is just their way of advertising it.
I wonder if we're going to get a free hat out of the deal.
What's funny is that for the Meet the Pyro video, apparently they're using Safety Dance, which is sung by Men Without Hats.
Oh, man.
Oh, good old Valve humor.
Yeah, that's fantastic. But yeah, let's see. Imran, what have you been playing, sir?
I started a Let's Play of a PlayStation 1 game from that I knew a couple of years back.
Oh.
And a friend linked me to a Cracked article about like weird Japanese games. I was like, oh, wait, this does exist, and I have a computer with emulators now, so might as well do this. So I've been playing LSD.
Oh, man. Oh, you got to put that. Is it on NitroBeard.com yet? Like, is the video up there?
It's not up there. I'm trying to decide if I just want to put, like, a couple episodes at a time or update it as it comes out.
Yeah.
Because you actually had an issue with YouTube recently, right? Where they're...
Oh, yeah, okay. Wait. So, a couple of weeks ago when Dragon's Dogma came out, I streamed it. And Justin TV has an ability to take what you stream and just put it on YouTube. So I figured, what the hell, might as well preserve this. Capcom doesn't like this so much because they put out a copyright complaint on the music of the stream.
That's how they get it. Yeah.
And I was like, hey, this is a stream, so I'm just going to dispute this complaint. And I check it a month later, and Capcom hasn't gotten back to it, so I'm still in not good standing.
Right.
And I had to upload a 40-minute video file, which it wasn't going to let me do as long as that was still on there. So they won, and I had to delete it.
Yep. That's exactly why, because I planned on having a whole bunch of E3 videos up. Yeah, apparently showing E3 videos is not, it's against copyright law. Even though it's not, even though that's complete BS and YouTube is just pansies about it. Because it's basically, that company didn't make money off of it, because it's a video. Basically, it's an advertisement. Basically, I put up an advertisement for something I don't own, so I get copyright hit for that.
I can understand music and things like that, like not with necessarily within games, but just in general. Like,
sure.
You don't want people putting up music videos and just never giving the authors money, but...
Right.
Yeah, I had to take down a bunch of Gran Turismo videos because of the licensed music in the game.
Yeah, like, the licenses for, like, the music and, like, streaming might be different.
Yeah, any music in a game that's not score but licensed pop music, mm-hmm. you're going to get dinged on that instantly.
Well, I mean, that, like, I put up an Alice Madness Returns video once, and it said, you can't do this because the music here is owned by this person.
Yeah,
it's just like the symphonic strings score.
Yeah, the same thing happens with Kingdoms of Amalur, I guess, but that one, it said, hey, this is copyrighted material, but you're still in good standing. And I was like, okay, so I'm able to put that up. But who knows, next time I upload a Kingdoms of Amalur video, it might get dinged for copyright infringement, which is stupid. Well, at that
point, Rhode Island's going to bill you money.
Yeah, they'll be like, please, give us $10. That'll help our cause. But yeah, man. But yeah, tell us about LSD. Like, for those that don't know what this game is.
Okay, so a Japanese developer who was working for Asmic Ace Entertainment, which I'd never heard of prior to this game, but, you know, he kept a dream journal for 10 years. And then at some point he just decided, okay, I'm going to make a game out of this journal. And basically what it is you're going through the same places every so often, but the textures are random, and what's in those places are random. Like, occasionally I'll just see elephants marching into a hole and dying, or this really nice, happy kingdom that seems to happen whenever I go to the very scary city. Like, one time I was in the city, the second the dream starts, I just look down, there's a bunch of dead guys on the floor. I should probably get out of here. And the next time I went, there was a woman who I approached, her head falls off, and then she tried to choke me to death.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So, there's no real point to the game besides just continuing.
Oh, wait a minute. Did you get your phone call after you started playing this game?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
Great.
I had a phone call last night as the video was uploading.
You see what I'm saying?
I thought it was kind of strange. I was like, nah, it's a video game. So maybe this video game is ringing me.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Because I posted that thing on Facebook, and people were like, yeah, you have 7 days. I'm like, fuck.
God
damn. 7 days isn't enough time to finish this LP.
Yeah, I need more time. But yeah, like, yeah, you need to put that up there, because I think people really need to see LSD, because it's pretty terrifying.
Yep.
It's... like, just unsettling.
There's a guy in a black coat and a bowler hat that's walking around with a cane, and if you see him, you have to run like hell, because if he catches you, you lose that dream, and you can never get it back.
Yeah, like, just weird, demented stuff. And it uses, since it's randomly generated, a lot of texture stuff will happen. Like, yep. If a texture's not found, like, it'll do that, like, white noise look. But I don't know if that's on purpose or if the game really just broke, or, like, I don't know. That's one.
Yeah, I can't tell, like, what's happening. Like, is the texture supposed to be warping, or is that just, like, part of the game?
Or is that the limitations of the PlayStation? Well, I don't know. Like, it's beyond recognition.
Japanese speakers have been helping me translate some of the stories they put in, and they're all kind of weird. Like, one of them's, like, a guy, it just says, it was decided which day I would die. It's going to be the 26th, so I just sit and wait. Like, okay.
Today's the 25th.
Like, there was one time I learned a dream, and it was just a video of a Japanese kid eating a hot dog. And, like, this really evil, dramatic music playing in the background. And it was maybe, like, 2 or 3 minutes of this. And at some point, I was terrified, and I started laughing, and I started terrified again.
I'm pretty sure that's an episode of Death Note. Oh, man. Oh, that's a wild game. But yeah, whatever you do the next one, put them both up on Nitro Beard so people can see this, because it is outrageous. Because I watched it, and I was unsettled, but I was always like, what team of people worked on this? Like, how do you start to make a game like this? But
I wonder if they could make something like this. Like, the closest thing I could think of would be Journey, but Journey is not willing to go quite so insane.
Yeah.
Something like this.
I was about to say, like, the only way that this could be made today, if it was part of, like, some indie game festival, and, like, you had a challenge to make a game in 24 hours, and you might be able to make something like this, but absolutely nothing if you had to, like, ask someone in a suit for money.
Right, yeah.
That's not
this would not get funded. No way.
See, I feel like our friend of the podcast, Andy McClure, would love this.
Oh, yeah. This is right up. That's the first thing I thought of. I was like, MCC would. Yeah.
This is the kind of game she would make.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, she definitely would. Which is kind of terrifying now that I think about it. Don't get any ideas. Don't watch any of it. Yeah.
Other Nitrobeard LP news. Mike Lemieux, our forums, Keo and I are going to start a Fear 3 LP soon.
Good. I've heard so much about that game, and I loved Fear 1, thought Fear 2 was okay, but just completely skipped Fear 3.
Yeah, it was $5 at like a Gamefly sale, so I figured, what the hell.
Yeah, man.
And now that I not have switched off Fraps and I'm using DxTory, which is way better, I have confidence that I can actually record that well.
With DxTory, okay, this is going to kind of get behind the scenes a little bit, but with DxTory, is the rendering out, is the file size as big?
As long as you use the right codec, I've had no problems.
Okay.
Like, what would be a 3.9 gig file in Fraps came out to about 500 megs on DxTory.
Awesome. And, like, no loss in quality or anything?
No, not that I've noticed. But, I mean, it's a PS1 game, so I wouldn't have noticed anyway.
Right.
So you kind of wonder how that became, like, a 4 gig file in PS1. The hell was going on?
Well, because they put everything completely uncompressed.
Yeah.
But the fact that they do that and the fact that it drains so much on resources, regardless,
yeah. It's
crazy. I get no resource drain on this and still a pretty compressed file.
That's fantastic. I need to start doing that because that's the only reason I haven't done more Kingdoms of Amalur stuff, is playing that game with Fraps going. It looks great, but then it would even render it out weird. Like, it'd render out the movie too dark, so I'd have to go in and manually adjust stuff afterwards. It was just a headache.
Well, the thing I'm having the problem with, like, every movie recorder is that audio desyncs after a while, and that's such a pain in fixing editing.
Yeah.
Now, are you guys using, like, special, like, video capture cards or any of this sort of thing?
Or, no, no,
like,
no.
They're just programs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Programs.
I use a capture card for my consoles.
Okay.
Yeah, for those, it's almost required, unless there's a way to actually... There's really no hardware way to do it without one.
Right. Like, it's either an internal capture card or, like, a USB device, and I just use a USB device.
Mm-hmm.
Other things. I started playing Prince of Persia: The Forgotten Sands because it was $4 on Games on Demand last week.
Nice.
That game is completely devoid of any personality whatsoever.
That's what worried me about it. I got it in I think they did a Prince of Persia Complete Pack last year on a Steam sale, and yeah. I got it. And yeah, I played Prince of Persia 2008, which I liked. It was really linear, but you know, it had enough charm to keep me going through it. And yeah, that one seemed like The Warrior Within. Just did nothing for me.
The story of this game's development is that originally they were making a Prince of Persia 2008 sequel for the Wii, and then at some point they decided they needed to do movie synergy for the Sands of Time movie. So they changed up the Wii game and put a different version on the HD systems based on the Wii foundation, and basically just released a kind of mechanical Sands of Time sequel. Which is why the prince suddenly looks like Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's kind of some concept artist had a field day with just erasing his face and drawing Jake Gyllenhaal's on there.
It's just super depressing how badly Ubi just completely bungled Prince of Persia this entire console generation.
Yeah.
Because that was such a great series with the three games they had for the PS2 era. Was there any overall, like, theme or idea or vision for anything they did this generation for that thing? It seems like all their talent, all their drive and passion went into Assassin's Creed. And, like,
well, that was originally a Prince of Persia game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they just, like, they figured there was no point in keeping a Prince of Persia game if it no longer played like one. So they changed it and tried to spin off Prince of Persia on it as its own series, which, when you talk about, that doesn't make much sense, but Assassin's Creed is the bigger series now. And yeah. I don't know if this is out yet, but Ubisoft is showing Prince of Persia a teaser trailer to journalists during E3.
Like, and, for the next generation consoles, or?
I don't know if it's, I mean, that's the only reason I can assume why they didn't actually show it publicly. But from what I can tell, it's apparently gritty, and it has a bow, so Year of the Bow.
Yeah.
Awesome. So
I don't think Prince of Persia needs to ever look realistic. Like, it needs to look cartoony. There's no reason that these characters should look real.
Right.
Like, my dream is that Prince of Persia looks like Legend of Korra.
That'd sure. be pretty rad, yeah.
Yeah.
Or like Thomas Sandman or something. That look like a comic or a cartoon or something fantastical, something that you'd actually want to spend time in, like a fairy tale, like it's basically based on.
And not if you're going to be in a desert or a castle, it needs to look interesting.
Yeah.
Not just dull and gray and boring and dusty. Yeah.
It shouldn't, like, there's no reason it should still look like Sands of Time. Sands of Time looked great at the time.
Yeah.
But, like, Prince of Persia can look so much better now. And 2008 proved that, and they didn't bother capturing.
Yeah, man, I love the way that game. I still love the way that game looks. Like, it's, yeah. that cell shading is done extremely well.
It had a lot of problems, but none of them are related to how it looks.
Right.
And at least you'd have an art style. You'd have a vision. Instead of just, yes. You know, everything looks gritty.
Yeah, it took creativity to make Prince of Persia 2008. I just wish they would have used it to make the actual game more. Right.
Prince of Persia should not look like a shitty Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I'm going to keep playing this game. $4 is a pretty good price for it.
Yeah, that's not bad for a decent action adventure game. Let's see. Anything else?
Gravity Rush, but that's pretty much the same as last week.
Right, right. And Matt Pierce, what have you been playing, sir?
Absolutely nothing.
well done.
Yeah, I picked up El Shaddai on Friday, and I unwrapped it during the podcast because I felt bad that it was still shrink wrapped.
Yeah. You did a box, live box opening.
Yeah.
So which system did you get it for?
360.
Okay.
And that's part of the problem. The 360 is in the den, and the PS3 is in the living room. So usually I just end up playing the PS3 because it's easier to get to.
Right.
You know, the baby's already asleep in the living room. I don't want to move her to the den so I can play exactly. the 360.
Because odds are she'll wake up if you do that.
Yeah, so maybe tonight I'll have to make the concerted effort to bring her in here and play some El Shaddai.
Yeah, man. Don't feel bad. I got Resident Evil Revelations and I haven't played it for a single second. It's just the box is just sitting right there. I'm excited to play it, though. But yeah, man, I've
and
been
nothing
playing...
of value was lost.
Oh, I've been actually playing three games, all completely different genres, and I don't know how this happened. But
didn't anyone tell you you have a baby? You can't play games anymore.
You can't do anything anymore. You just have to stare at that baby, in case baby needs something. But
or in case the baby rolls over on its stomach and is like, ah, shit.
Well, now she's at the age to where she'll manually do that. Like, she can actually, her legs are so strong, she'll just kick and then just, like, flip herself over and then be like, oh, what the hell? And, like, look around, and it's really funny to do, but I guess it's good leg exercise. Because she turned 3 months 2 days ago? So, yeah, she's getting to that age. But yeah, these three games are really weird. I'll just name the games, and then I'll just briefly go over them, or I'll have you guys tell me which one I should explain first. Okay, the new Penny Arcade on the Rainslick Precipice of Darkness, episode 3, it's just called Number 3 now. That came out earlier today, been playing that.
Yeah.
NBA 2K12.
Okay.
Right?
What's the third one?
Pokemon Conquest.
NBA. Oh, God, NBA.
Okay, but okay. Well, let's go over NBA. I have not played a sports game, not even just a basketball game or anything like that. I haven't played a sports game since 2005 with NFL 2K5, which is still kind of probably the best football game ever made. But before that, my last basketball game was like NBA Live 95, like forever ago. I don't know a thing about basketball, nothing about it. I kind of know what a point guard is. I think
the most easy to figure out. There's five dudes. You can see everything at the same time.
Yeah,
it's not that
you make sure one of the guys isn't open for the ball.
Right.
You know,
it doesn't make sense for a video game. Unlike football, which I cannot figure out how the hell works as a video game to this day.
Oh, but the best thing about NBA 2K12 is there's a My Player mode. Where you create your duder and give him special shoes and pick his number. But you basically go through an NBA draft game. Like, basically it's a rookie game, all-star rookie game, and then the draft, they can figure out whose team you're going to be on and all that stuff. So I played terribly, because I didn't know how to play the game. So
you got drafted by the Clippers, right?
I got, no, the Timberwolves, which is even worse.
Yeah.
And every time that starts up the game, it's like, the Timberwolves have the worst record in the NBA. And here comes my dude strutting out there, like, waving at the cameras. And, okay, and the great thing about this mode is it's all in first person. Like, unless you're on the court, right? But what I mean by that is I'm seventh string on the Timberwolves. So I'm like a step above the janitor, right? So like...
Wow, you are terrible!
I'm the worst player in the NBA, by far. So I'm sitting on the bench, but my camera... I'm sitting on the bench, like, I'm watching a basketball game happening through a first-person view of watching a basketball game happening on a team that I'm on, and I'm so bad, I'm on the bench. So,
now, is there a button you can press to just skip?
Yeah.
Play? Okay.
There is, but for comedic effect, my first game, I just waited. And, like, put me in coach, like, I just waited on the bench.
Now, can you wave over like one of the cheerleader chicks and like get her numbers?
Control the little camera like your pivot. You can pivot your head, so you could turn over to the crowd and like if you focus on the crowd, you can hear ambient noise of people going like "You suck," and like, yeah. Or you can pivot your head around and like.
Should be able to pull out like your phone and start texting so you'll appear on ESPN the next night. So, oh my god, this guy's a paying attention to the game.
I need to take a video of this and just put it on Nitro Beard. Because I'm sitting on the bench and then the guy who's on the team next to me will like be staring at me. Like I guess his character model will flip out, so he'll just be this dead eye where they don't blink and they're just like, and I'm like, dude, get the fuck off me. Like, what are you doing?
He went aggro.
Yeah, he did, man. He's just staring at me. And I was like, what do you expect me to do? I'm on the bench. But then they put me in the game, and, you know, the game's so hard. Since I don't understand basketball, I don't know what I'm doing. So it just gives me an arrow to stay by this guy, make sure he doesn't make a basket. But during the game, you get ranked, right? Like, you start with a C ranking. And then depending on if you do good stuff, you go up to, like, C+, or depending on – and there's a meter that fills up that shows it to you. It's like an XP meter. So, you know, hey, good pass, you gain 10 points. You gain 10 little HP points, and then it ups it. But then if your guy makes a shot, like the guy you're defending, you lose like half a level. So it's like the worst MMO ever, you know, and I'm here playing, and I get put up against the Lakers, and the guy I'm supposed to defend is Kobe Bryant.
Wow, you're
doomed. My shitty 5'9". Dude has a D ranking and 7th string on the Timberwolves.
And remember when your coach is a dick?
Yeah.
You're an idiot.
Are they selling tickets on comedic effect?
Oh, yeah, I guess so. And then, of course, Kobe scores like 86 points on me. But my ranking goes down to like a D-, and everyone...
He's scoring points, he's fucking your wife, he's driving your car in the middle of the game. It's awful.
And then, it is, it's the worst thing, and I'm frustrated at the game, so I have like 7 reach-in fouls. I'm just running around now. I'm like, fuck this, fuck all of you, fuck this. And then after each game, there's a press conference, and you kind of like choose your own adventure, get to like... Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You get to like choose what type of attitude you have, and like you pick what it... And then someone was like, your team really seemed to suffer tonight. What do you expect to do about it? And I made my guy answer, I'm going to make more 8-point shots. Like that was my I was just an asshole. I was like, you know what, fuck all y'all. And I
man, that's a good strat. 8-point shots is a great strat. Yeah.
Okay, now we definitely need a Mass Effect basketball game.
And like, but after that, it shows your rankings like, okay, the league likes you better and your fans don't like you, but your team does. Like it balances it out. After that press conference, I won Rookie of the Year. Like for that. And I'm like, you know, this game's pretty incredible. I'm bad at it. This is a really hard mode because I've asked a few friends that are actually really into sports games, and they're like, oh yeah, man, the my player mode on NBA is impossible. It's so hard. And I was like, okay, so I'm not as bad as I think I am. Maybe.
I think you're supposed to just play the normal game and just like pick your favorite team
yeah.
and just play that through the series.
Sure.
You're probably not actually supposed to play this mode.
Man, this mode is hilarious. Like, and I got a sponsorship deal, like, so I have Air Jordans that have my name on it, even though I'm the worst player in the league.
Are they actually Nikes or like some kind of like pick and pay like ripoff of Nikes?
They're actual and like Jordans in the game, and he's like, man, you do good work. And I was like, I don't do any good work. It's like, what
keep
are you talking
about? That bench nice and warm.
Yeah, what are you talking about, Jordan? But but that's my NBA 2K experience so far. Like, but the game is fun to play. Like, I don't understand the game of basketball, even after playing this mode. But what I do, Like, you have a lot of stuff, like, you're dribbling and, you know, shot taking and stuff. It's all procedural. So the animations look great. Like, it looks like you're watching a game of basketball. And so the game itself is really well put together. And if you're into basketball, I highly recommend it. But chances are, you probably already bought this shit last year, whenever it was brand new. But yeah, that's my NBA talk. Oh, man.
So tell me about Pokemon Conquest, because I don't really know anything about it besides just Nobunaga's Ambition, which I've never played, and Pokemon.
Sure, and that's kind of whenever people told me about it, I was like, that sounds cool, but that's literally what this game is. I bought it because the maps are set up like Final Fantasy Tactics.
Now, what system is this on? We're talking like 3DS, Wii?
It's a DS game, but I'm playing it on my 3DS. Yeah, it's basically a tactics game. It's like a Final Fantasy Tactics or a Tactics Ogre, but you're using Pokemon, and a kingdom, basically, oh, I'm going to go take over this kingdom. It's basically another gym battle. Like, I'm going to go take over this kingdom. They have a lot of fire Pokemon. And then, so you go do that, and you go do your Final Fantasy Tactics battle. And oddly enough, this works really well with Pokemon, because you already think, okay, there's already a rock, paper, scissors thing going on. Like, okay, well, I have a grass-type Pokemon. Water isn't very effective against it, but fire is. So you can already start making your armies based on that stuff. But for the collectible, like, mentality, the gotta-catch-em-all deal, this game might be more addictive than regular Pokemon, because not only do you catch Pokemon, but you catch trainers to add to your Warlord army. And the only weird thing about the game is each month you can only do one action. So you can go to the store and buy stuff, or you can do a battle, or you can try to take out another, you know, rival gang, you know, take over their kingdom. And then you have to go on to the next month. And where I'm at right now, I'm almost done with my first year, but I have like 7 or 8 different warlords, and I can make 2 of them go battle, 2 of them go shop. I can control 2 of them. So, you know, it's kind of like a economy simulator in a way, but it's really good. It's kind of a what it reminded me of a little bit is Spore. You know how Spore was set up to where there's 5 game modes and all of them is basically like baby's first MMO.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the baby's first Geometry Wars or whatever. This is kind of what it's set up like, but there's still a lot of depth to it. Like, there's only certain Pokemon that'll go with certain warlords. And if you sync those two up together, they're more powerful. And there's like 200 warlords, 200 Pokemon. It's, you know, there's a lot to do there. But I love it. I've always wanted another, you know, Tactics Ogre / Final Fantasy Tactics game for the DS. And this fits the bill really well. And it's easy because they use Pokemon from all sorts of generations. So they have like Pikachu and Charmander, but they also have the like Bidoof and stuff like that.
Fuck yeah, Bidoof.
Yeah, man. And Bidoof's really strong. Which I think he's really strong. He can get and the one other bonus thing about it that's really cool is each warlord has a special move that they can do. So like, okay, say my main character, his special move is that he can heal everybody automatically. Like everybody on my team, he can heal them immediately. And the good news is that doesn't take up a turn, but you can only use it once per battle. So, yeah, there's different strategies to it. It works really well. Like, I recommend it. It's, you know, $35, and I think you'd get $35 out of it.
It is kind of strange how Nintendo has been slowly purchasing Tecmo Koi over the last couple of years.
I mean, I'll put it this way. I hope this turns into a bigger franchise. I hope this isn't just a one-off. I hope this is something... I hope it turns into, like, a mystery dungeon type, where they have, like, 5 or 6 of them a generation. Because I wouldn't mind playing more of this. It's a good little game.
Tecmo Koi under Nintendo would help about everyone involved. So,
yeah.
It's like they were saying that Nintendo is making them fix a lot of the things about Ninja Gaiden 3. I don't think it's going to be enough, but
right.
We'll see. And now apparently Nintendo co-owns Fatal Frame. I don't know if that was a thing that could happen.
Wow. That's bizarre. Do you think we're actually going to see something new from Fatal Frame then?
I'm sure they're making a Wii U game at some point.
They have to, because it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that does make perfect sense. Use that as a camera.
Yeah.
That would actually be cool, just moving that thing around and suddenly Ghost pops up. Because Fatal Frame games, I'm not ashamed to admit, have kind of freaked me out.
Yeah, I mean, the premise is unsettling. And, like, it's one of those that the games happen so slow that I think it's a good thing. Like, it shouldn't be fast-paced action. Like, so there's this really slow burn as you're going through the stuff, and you're like, oh, I know it's going to happen, but when's it going to happen? You know.
So I think the Fatal Frame needs are, like, incongruously expensive for what they are for, like, the PS2 games. So I'm not sure I should play any of them. Because I think they still cost, like, $30 even for, like, the PS2 versions.
Yeah.
Yeah, the newest Wii one is a remake of 2. And that's at very least coming to Europe.
It's like, yeah, the Fatal Frame 2 Crimson Butterfly for the Xbox costs $55. But who knows if that's, like, Amazon just pushing up the price.
Yeah.
But then the last game, and I do want to touch on it because I'm actually pleasantly surprised with it, is the Penny Arcade on the Rain Slick Precipice of Darkness number 3. It's made by the Zeboid Games, the same people that made, like, Call of Cthulhu and Breath of Death 7.
Yeah.
Those kind of retrograde RPGs. And basically, this is a Penny Arcade version of Final Fantasy V. There's job systems. You can have up to 3 jobs. The writing in this one, I actually think, is a lot better than the writings in the other ones. Like, it seems more... It makes more sense in regards to a very traditional RPG.
Is the battle system still timing-based?
No. It's basically active time battle. It is a Final Fantasy battle system through and through.
I don't like that change, then. I actually kind of enjoyed how Paper Mario-style the old battle system was.
It was pretty cool. I mean, later on, it might do something. I mean, I'm only about 2 hours into it right now. But from what I play, it's really fun. It's like they cut the fat away from that old-school-style RPG. Like, if this would have came out in the Super Nintendo era... It would be a cult classic. It would be one of those that, you know, it looks good. The game plays really well. It's very fast-paced. Has different difficulty levels. The writing, I mean, it just depends on if you're into Penny Arcade humor. But it actually got a few literal laughs for me. Like, I would say the first two just kind of made me smirk more than anything. Like, haha, look how funny mimes are. You know, that type of fuddy-duddy humor. Mm-hmm. But this one actually has good writing. But I also love Breath of Death and Call of Cthulhu. I thought those were written pretty well, too. So, but yeah, and I think it's just two guys that made these games. So I'm glad they got a big sponsorship from Penny Arcade. And yeah, it's $5 on Steam. I know Android and iPhone version is coming out probably, hopefully, by the end of the month. Xbox Live Arcade's coming out Thursday. It's a good game.
Yeah. It's very cheap, $5, and you get the other two games. That's probably something to leap on.
And with that being said, I have a giftable copy of Call of Cthulhu and Breath of Death 7 combo pack, so I'll probably think of some way to do a giveaway on NitroBeer.com for it, because those are two really fun games. I recommend those as well. But yeah, I would say if you're a fan of, like, those old turn-based RPGs that have job systems, I would say get it, because you can customize what job loadout you get. You can have one primary job and 2 sub-jobs. Take one thing from each sub-job. Some of it gets kind of difficult, but there's also difficulty modes. Like, you can start on easy, normal, insane, all that good stuff. But yeah, $5, man. It's well worth it. You're probably looking at a good 30-hour game for $5, and it's funny enough that you will want to read the story, even if the story is silly. Just to see kind of the timing tropes they do on it.
I've actually been eating cheap the last 2 weeks for the Steam sale.
Yeah, man, I have too. My big paycheck comes tomorrow, so I'm hoping to get some good stuff. Okay, what are we hoping for? Like, what big game are you hoping goes on a pretty good sale that you can pick up that you've been meaning to?
Binary Domain.
Oh, good call. I'd never would have. Because, see, for me, oddly enough, I really want Operation Raccoon City to be like $10.
Yeah, but that's Capcom. They're not going to discount anything. Yeah. They might put Street Fighter 4, not Arcade Edition, on sale.
For $20 instead of $30.
Yeah. They actually did that after Arcade Edition came out. They only put the original on sale.
Yeah, which is upsetting. But yeah, like, or let's see, Heroes of Might and Magic 6. Yeah. I would buy the shit out of that game. If it's for like $6 or $7, oh man.
I would really like Skyrim to drop down to $30 because I really don't want my total Skyrim experience to cost $120.
No, odds are very good that that's going to happen. Like, odds are very good that you're probably going to get it for about $25 because
I'd also I'd also like to see Arma go down because I'd like to play World War Z, DayZ.
There's no way they're not making that a sale. It's just too popular now.
Yeah, it's
they have to sale it.
Yeah, I mean, it's still number two on the best-selling list and has been for months.
I'm sorry for interrupting. What were you going to say about Skyrim, though?
Oh, yeah, Skyrim odds are good that it's going to be on a sale simply because Dawnguard's coming out, and they want a big enough install base that they're going to have people that already haven't picked it up to... But yeah, man, I would say go for it. And plus, that game is Steamworks now, and it has a Steam Workshop, so you can download custom stuff for free. And a lot of that custom stuff's really good. A lot of it's kind of bad, but... I'd say it's probably a 70-30 split on the good to the bad.
Right.
I want to try Walking Dead, so I'm hoping that pack goes on sale.
That's true. I hope so, too. Odds are the Telltale games like Monkey Island and Sam & Max, those will go on sale because they normally do. But, God, let me even bring up my Steam wish list. What else?
Oh, wait. Spec Ops The Line is coming out?
It's this week. So they swear to God it's this week. Who knows if it's actually coming out? IGN and VGGameReleases.com with a Z, mind you, both confirmed that's coming out this week.
So. I know nothing about that game besides them just saying it's about sand. There's sand everywhere. Sand can do this. I don't think there's anything more to that game besides sand.
I would, let's see. I'm looking through my... I'll admit, if Assassin's Creed Revelations is like $10, I'd pick it up.
I can see them doing that. Get people hyped for 3.
Yeah. I'd pick that
up. Which also got delayed recently, the PC version.
Is sad. Okay, odds
are... Conundrum, like, I'm hoping that gets... I mean, I know it just came out, but, like, I'm not going to buy a game a couple of days before a Steam sale.
Right, and that's how I am with Max Payne 3. I'm hoping they do something, but odds are they won't. If it's a $60 PC game, that means even half off, it's still $30. And it's like, man...
Yeah.
It's...
I know it's really bad of me to not pay $10 for Terraria, but I'd like to see Terraria go lower than that.
Oh, it will. You'll probably see Terraria for $250. Almost guaranteed. I think it was last year. I think it was on the Steam sale. Just, here's the secret. For people listening, they've never been through a Steam sale before. Do not buy something unless it is a daily deal. Don't buy it.
Because if you really want it, just wait till the last day to make sure it's on a daily deal.
Exactly, because literally last year I bought something, I can't remember what it was, but I got it for 50% off, and then the day after I bought it, it was 80% off, and I was pissed.
Wow.
Yeah, like I was super pissed, because I didn't have a whole lot of money to spend anyway, so I was like, I could have saved that $15 or whatever. But yeah, there's supposed to be some good stuff, so I'm hoping they bring up some stuff that I totally forgot was on Steam. Because Steam's really good about that, too, about like, oh, yeah, you remember this whole series of games that's on there? And I was like, oh, shit, I forgot. Like, that's how I picked up the id pack with Quake and Doom and stuff like that last year, so who knows? But, yeah, any other thing we want to touch on before we call it a show?
I'm good.
Cool. All right. This has been episode number 91. We are 9 episodes away from episode 100. Big things are going to happen, guys.
And 8 episodes away from episode 99.
That's right. And even bigger things are happening on that one. Just hype up stuff for no reason. But yeah, some just know that we are at a round table and we're, you know, just rubbing our hands together gleefully with some plans. Some back-end work happening here in Nitrobeard. But yeah, Brian.
Yeah, it is.
You know what I'm saying? Working on that back-end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Huh? Okay. We're talking about that girl that was posing on the sofa.
Oh. That poor girl.
Her back must be so contorted.
She probably has scoliosis.
Yeah. She did that thing, you know, the Exorcist, whenever she does that backwards crab crawl down the stairs. Like, I bet that's how she has to get around. So that's not nice to make fun of people. All right. Episode 91, we're done. Imran, Mark, Matt, thanks for joining. Thanks for joining me. I was about to say something about Brian, but Brian's not here. Brian's not here. But he's always here in our hearts. All right, guys, we're out.
See ya.
See ya.